doing things, so let me just make sure I have all of my act together here, as much as to be expected, and we're going to jump right in. Okay. So, as I often do, I really want to start with gratitude. Just the gratitude that there are people here that are just sacrificing their Sunday mornings to help us put this live stream service together. And to put it together for everybody that's in the Facebook crowd, just getting connected in this really wonderful technological way. I'm grateful for the folks that are working with the videos and making sure that the people that are not on Facebook have an access to the Sunday service via our YouTube channel. And I'm grateful for the podcasts that are on our website as well. You have three options of participating in the service, and I'm so grateful for all of that. But even more than that, I'm so grateful for all of you, for our beautiful congregation. One of the things that has been going through my head a lot is from one of my favorite prophets, Joni Mitchell. And she wrote this song called, They Pave Paradise and They Put Up a Parking Lot, right? Probably some of you know that song. I will refrain from singing it at the moment. But anyway, in this song, she says, don't it always seem to go, you don't know what you got till it's gone. And I know that we are not separate forever. I know that this situation will pass, as all situations do. But I have noticed just this inner rampage of appreciation for our beautiful congregation since the circumstances of life have caused us to have to separate. We are gone physically, but not gone in heart. But even the physical distance has reawakened my great love and gratitude for all of you. I did a practitioner call on, Thursday or Friday of last week, and you just sort of should have seen these faces light up when the practitioners, there were about 20 of us on the call, and we saw each other for the first time in weeks, and people's faces were lighting up. It was like a little homecoming. It was just so sweet and so wonderful, and it just proves that we love each other. And what I know about this love is that it is stronger than any condition that the world can offer up. We will overcome. We will overcome. We will prevail because love prevails. But the key to love prevailing has to do with something that I say every Sunday. Under normal circumstances, we sing, I am remembering who I am, and there is some talk about putting that back into the service in a creative way if we can, but stay tuned, we're working it out as we go along. Under normal circumstances, we sing, I am remembering who I am, which is a beautiful chant, and then we have a moment of silence afterwards, and then I invite the congregation to breathe in deeply. Do it with me now, if you would. Breathe in deeply, and then exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is. A lot of you know that words by heart, those words by heart. A lot of you are very familiar with that phrase, and a lot of people sometimes come up to me and say, do we really have to be in love with what is? Do we really have to be in love with everything that is? And I usually say to them, well, you don't need to like it. But if you want to be really creative, if you want to explore greater possibilities, if you want to move into your own greatness, then yes, we have to be in a state of love with what is, as it is, and so it is. And we also get to be in a state of service with what is, as it is, and so it is. The word, and so it is, makes it true, makes it real. And so we get to realize this greater perception of love, even when our perception of love is being tested. Because certainly the situation with the coronavirus has tested a lot of our perceptions of love, or a lot of our sense of well-being, or even our sense of self-love. You know, people are afraid, people are in despair, people are wondering what will happen. There's a whole range of emotions going on. People are suffering because they're letting go of things that were vital and important to them. I spoke with a bride a couple of days ago who was talking about having to cancel her wedding, and she was so sad about that because she was really looking forward to getting married before her grandmother passed away. And what an honor it was. What a precious gift it was to be able to say, well, there is this thing called Skype, and maybe we can Skype your wedding. Now, it's not legal to to Skype a wedding when the bride and groom are not in the presence of the officiant, but they are in a situation where I can marry them if they're 6 feet away from me. So we're going to Skype a wedding. So many of us are reaching into greater depths of love to be in a greater place of creativity with everything that is happening. I know that I've named some things that I've noticed in some people, but there are other things that are happening for others, deep concern and deep fear and deep pain, and also, again, on top of all this, deep appreciation and deep wonder and deep imagining, deep possibilities. So how do we get to a place where we are in that place of in love with what is more of the time? More of the time, knowing that it is a blessing not only to us, but to the whole world, if we are in a place where we are in love with what is. One thing that I found very helpful is to recognize when we are resistant to love, to loving what is. You know, the A Course in Miracles often says that love is the opposite of fear. Fear is the opposite of love. And fear often manifests in our lives as resistance. Resistance takes many forms. Perhaps some of you can shout some of those forms out on the Facebook page. It's often guilt or blame or avoidance or procrastination or shame or anything that blocks the flow of the perception of love, because the perception of love is truth, and anything that blocks the flow of that perception is a form of resistance. Recently, I've been looking a lot at the resistance of blame, the form of resistance known as blame. I don't know if you all remember, after 9/11, there was a lot of blame going on about who caused it. One of the fundamentalist preachers, who shall remain nameless, was linking 9/11 to certain groups of minorities that he felt were unacceptable. And I want us to avoid doing that here with this pandemic, that we can't, if we move into a place of blame, that automatically invites punishment and it automatically invites defensiveness, and that keeps us out of love. That keeps us out of a place where we can really be creative and open and resilient to the new solutions for humanity that will emerge from this. So I'm asking us to look at our tendency to blame. I looked on the internet to see what kind of blamey things were there. You know, it was politicians and countries and Kourtney Kardashian blames God. A couple of weeks ago, I blamed beer, that the coronavirus was caused by Corona beer. That was a rumor that was going around for a while. You know, I'm not sure if all of you know this, but it hailed in Ventura the other day. There was hail. So that got me thinking, you know? I mean, Passover's coming up, right? And, you know, there may be some plague thing going on, ten plagues of God. Right now, we've got hail, maybe we've got frogs, and we certainly have a dearth of toilet paper, which was definitely in the Bible, those three things, right? Hail, frogs, and an absence of toilet paper, a complete absence of toilet paper. We're all set, though, but if you're not, I have some solutions for you. Anyway, let's don't go into that right now, shall we? Let's talk more about the tendency to blame and what it does for us. It cuts us off. It cuts us off from a greater perception of reality. Now, this is not to say that we can't discern what certain causes and effects were, but we discern without condemnation. I read a really funny thing on the internet the other day. At least I thought it was funny. One of our congregants posted it, and it said, "Do you ever get the feeling that the earth has sent us to our rooms so that we can think about what we've done?" Perhaps some of you remember having that happen to you as a child, right? Go to your room and think about what you've done. And that's kind of what's going on here, perhaps, but I tend to want to reframe that in even a more positive manner, that the entire universe has conspired to send us on a retreat, a retreat where we get to look at ourselves and we get to look at our relationship with the earth and we get to look at our relationship with humanity and all beings everywhere, where we look at our relationship with God, where we look at our understanding of what this thing called existence is. And perhaps through the process of contemplation and vowing to live like the truth of our contemplation is true, perhaps that is one of the finest blessings in this situation that we are now calling COVID-19. So when we're sent to our rooms, when we're sent to our isolation or to our silent retreats, what is it that we look at? What do we contemplate? Well, being who I am, I would say that we contemplate the nature of existence. Because understanding the true nature of existence, not that anybody can truly understand it, but understanding the best version of the true nature of existence, I think will help us move through this in a very deep and a powerful way. Many of you who attend this center regularly know that I teach a lot about absolute reality. We all teach a lot about absolute reality, which is a non-dual teaching. And we believe that there is one sacred reality, one wholeness that embraces everything. That wholeness is perfect, perfect meaning inclusive of everything. A way to understand absolute reality that I often use is if you're standing on the ground and there are clouds in the sky, but then you go up in a plane and the sun is shining, and you say to yourself, what is it? Is it a cloudy day or a sunny day? The answer, of course, is everybody. Yes. Yes, yes. I'm hoping the whole Facebook crowd said yes, because it is both. Absolute reality contains all of these relative realities. And relative realities, our perception of relative reality depends exactly on that, our position in it and our perception of it. Relative reality is not the whole truth, and there are many, many, many relative realities around, as many relative realities as there are people. We have many relative realities about the coronavirus, and the way that we get in trouble is that we say, this reality that I am perceiving, this relative reality, when we say that this is the truth and the only truth, when we confuse it with the absolute truth, when it is really relative, that's what gets us stuck, and that's what gets us in trouble. That is being distant from being in love. Examples of relativism during the coronavirus. Some of you may have noticed this for yourselves. You know, we're all supposed to stay home, right? We're all staying home, hopefully, because that seems to be the best way to address this illness. And on a normal day, I would not really want to be interrupted from working at home or writing a sermon or what have you. But my husband came to me the other day, and he needed a prescription filled. And he said, like, Bon, I need to go to Rite Aid to get a prescription filled. And I'm like, I'll do it, right? Desperate to get to that mecca known as Rite Aid. That's relativism. Right? Rite Aid used to be not so much fun. All of a sudden, because of this, it's a great place to be. Another example of that that I heard from my friend Mark LaPonce, there was, I guess, a meme circulating on the internet or Facebook or what have you, and it was this young man with a wife and his kid. The wife and the kid weren't in the picture, but there was somebody interviewing this young man, and they said to him, Okay, you've been on quarantine for a week now. Now, we have an option for you. You can either A, stay here with your wife and your child, or B, and the young man goes, B. You do the work and see how that's relative. You know, it probably used to be like super fun to stay with your wife and your child, but when you're with them for 2 weeks, that has changed your position in reality, that has changed your perception, and therefore it is relative. The relative is changeable. So now, what does this have to do with the coronavirus? Let me make this really clear, because what is happening in our perception of the coronavirus because of the news, and the news is just doing their job, and because of our human fear, and because of our resistance to impermanence, and because of our reluctance to be uncertain, what happens is that when we hear about the coronavirus, we make it this big. We make it bigger than the room. It is a huge cloud in our minds, hovering over the planet Earth and engulfing all of us. And the truth about the coronavirus is something different. The reality that I just described is based on our fear. It is based on our relativism, meaning that this is something that might happen to me, or it might happen to someone I love, or it might change humanity as we know it in a bad way. The truth about coronavirus is something different. Coronavirus is an incident that is this big, probably even smaller. And surrounding all of this, this tiny little thing, surrounding it is an infinite reality. An infinite reality that stretches beyond what we know, that reaches in farther than we ever possibly can, that reaches out to great heights and depths. This is a tiny little thing in the landscape of existence of humanity, and that is not to diminish it. We still have to take it seriously. The only purpose in looking at it that way, or I think the primary purpose in looking at it that way, is saying, yes, coronavirus is bad, but we are better. And I mean that in a good way. Like, you know, bad booty, bad, you know, can't say that word in church, but we are better. You could say coronavirus is big, but we are bigger. The human spirit, the resilience, the love, the creativity, the possibility that we call forth, the synergy, the community, all of that is far bigger than any virus, anything that is in existence, because we are that. We are that I am, which is the infinite life of spirit pouring through us when we allow it. We see it when we allow it. It's always there, but we see it and we experience the benefits when we allow it. There are people that say, and I read an article by Charles Eisenstein this morning, and it's a great article. I didn't really have time to incorporate much of it. But there are people that say that this is a turning point for humanity. This is a powerful thing. This little thing that is this big is affecting in a positive way all of this greatness around it. Charles Eisenstein was talking about how the whole world is coming together, for the most part, and practicing social isolation and taking care of each other. And he said, what if, when this is over, we could consider the 5 million children that die of hunger every year and launch a similar movement to take care of them? You see how this is fraught with possibilities? You see how this is filled with potential? You see how this just can bloom into something magnificent beyond our imagination? It's a matter of being in love, in a state of love with it, and allowing that love that is greater than our ego, greater than our fear, greater than our resistance, greater than anything, to lead us into what I would say righteousness, which is a combination of love and integrity and the next right thing to do. Now, lest this sound unmanageable for anybody, because it does feel like a big vision, a big dream, how are we going to make this go away? How are we going to feed 500 or 5 million children that are starving? How are we going to address all of the situations and challenges in the world that may have contributed to this or that are contributing to other situations that are not loving and not kind and not beautiful? It may seem like it's too much. But what I know was stated so eloquently in that reading that Hugh did, that reading about that we are all given a little portion of the earth, of life. The universe gave that author 3 millimeters to take care of. And it seems like it's tiny, but if we're all taking care of our 3 millimeters, then that is mighty. Tiny becomes mighty when we all do what we are called to do in a kind and a loving and a joyful way. We can do this. We can totally do this. And I know that we can do this. I know that we can change this situation up, that we can change the way that we are in it. We can change the world through our intention to do the work of love, to be in love by doing the work of love in our small 3 millimeters of existence. The reason that I know this is because of our community here in Ventura. our church community, and most certainly the community at large, but I'm specifically referring to our church community, which is expanding, by the way, because people are inviting their friends to watch the Facebook feed, and I love that. Thank you so much. We have a powerful message to get out, and it's really important. It's really important in times like these. I know that we are capable because of what I'm seeing on Facebook. Last week, I posted something that said, "Will you help me write my sermon?" Lonnie suggested that. Lonnie suggested that I ask a question. And the question I asked had to do with our vision statement. How, in this time of pandemic, are you choosing to be love, serve love, and share love? And we got so many responses from people in the community and beyond. And I'm going to share them with you. There they are. Okay. There were so many responses, seriously, tons, and some of them were paragraphs. So in the interest of time, you can read them on the Facebook feed, but I'm just going to give you the highlights to include, to make an effort to include everybody, and if I leave you out by mistake, that's an opportunity to practice divine forgiveness. Okay, so here we go. Deborah is bringing groceries and providing encouragement. Michael is playing music, Fleetwood Mac, I believe he said, and checking neighbors. Deanna is playing balcony charades with neighbors, or at least looking into that possibility, and they're having a parking lot picnic where attendees eat in cars, and they had a car parade for the students of her school, where the students were inside and the teachers drove around in their cars with balloons on them. Janet is writing COVID-19 limericks. We'll hear one of those later. Jennifer is sending daily affirmation card readings. Lonnie is remembering to nurture and soothe her inner critic. Lucky is baking cookies and sewing masks. Dot is paying her cleaning person, even though the cleaning person isn't cleaning right now. John is doing a corona tithe, meaning that he is discounting the rent on his rental property. Verna is sharing spiritual support with friends who might be in fear. Sue is sending custom postcards and cards. Joan is creating art at a distance. Karina is affirming that she is free and she's playing Tibetan bowls. Jan is embracing fear, letting go, and learning Zoom at the age of 75. Jana is participating in a fruit-sharing project with her neighbors. Deborah is cooking and gifting meals. Susie is enjoying smiles of others when she walks outside. Dina, she wrote a lot, but the gist of it was self-care, quiet reflections, sweet memories of her children, and saying the change me prayer. Rick is finding peace with God. Judy dry shampooed her 90-plus mother's hair, making her mother's day. Bernie practices daily appreciation and practicing the presence. Nick affirms that this is a historic moment of awakening. Angie is teaching from home, and her daughter is sewing masks and shopping for the elderly. Karen expressed gratitude for our center family. Amy is practicing Tonglen meditation. It's a meditation of giving and receiving, alleviating suffering. Jim, recognizing the comforts of community. Leah acknowledged the devotion of healthcare workers who helped her care for her father. Michelle is helping a struggling restaurant by distributing gift certificates. Bill is finding joy in reaching out to center members as a practitioner. Janet had a family Zoom with her 90-year-old mother. Deborah is acknowledging the kindness of everybody on this Facebook post. Ardelia is affirming, "I am love, I am peace, I am serene." Susan is taking her cats out in a dog stroller, much to their distress. Tobias is helping seniors with groceries and pharmacy runs. And Fred, our beloved Fred, is feeling the ripples of love. Now, I may not have gotten all of them, but that is a significant list, isn't it? And a lot of them are similar, but a lot of them are just uniquely made. And I think that this truly is the nature of the reality, and it's another reason to be in love as it is, to be in love with what is as it is, because what is perfect. What is perfect? All of those little points of light of inspiration that were on that post and beyond are healing the world through their unique expression of the divine. Who among us in this very room, all nine of us, would have thought of doing charades on a balcony? Not me. I'm hearing a never from somebody who's pretty adamant. Chris, was that you? No, okay. There are so many things there that I never would have thought of. And look at how this information is getting out into the universe, into the world, sparking more ideas for creativity, sparking more ways to serve, sparking more ways to be in a state of love with things as they are. You know, I think this really cuts to the core of a human perception that is something that we have to constantly peel away from ourselves like a snake sheds a skin. And that is that our ability to love, our happiness, our joy, our faith is based on what is happening out there. What is out there, whether it's a bad day or a terrible virus or whether it's just anything you can name, has nothing to do with our inner state of happiness. And this is our chance to prove it. This is our chance to prove unconditional love, love that is independent of conditions, and joy that is unconditional, joy that is independent of conditions. And so in the name of joy, I'm going to read one of those limericks that our sister Jane, or Janet rather, posted. She wrote, "The news is all filled with insistence that we all clearly keep social distance. So I'm here in my chair, and that's Jim over there. It's a spacious form of coexistence." Kudos to Janet for that beautiful, beautiful limerick. You know, and that's the thing. Like, when I read that limerick, and she was giving herself permission to be joyful at this time, and you know, a lot of us don't need a lot of permission to be joyful in this church. We're joyful pretty much. But I was thinking to myself, maybe tone it down a bit on Sundays. Maybe people are really distressed. And then I read Janet's limerick, and I was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I'm going to be joyful. So since it was about social distancing, I came up with my own thoughts about social distancing, my own idea as to how to social distance. And this is something that I'm going to employ when I go to the grocery store, because I think it will keep people 6 feet away from me. Just give me a minute, I'll be right back. This is my new tool for shopping, and I'm going to go in the grocery store and walk around like this. It's a little hard with my mic thing on, right? And I'm going to walk around and say, "Hi, sir." Whoa, sorry. See what I mean? It keeps people away. I'm going to say, "Hi, sir. Can you tell me where the sun-dried tomatoes are? Oh, over there? Okay, here I go. Thank you. I really appreciate that." And so on. Stop that. So on and so on. I am a fool for absolute reality. So, friends, all silliness aside, no, I don't mean that. I love silliness. All silliness in this cosmic soup that we create here at this beautiful, beautiful center. Let us just affirm this as we wind up this talk. Do you see how amazingly beautiful you all are? Did you hear that list and know that for every person that didn't write, that every person that wrote something down, there are at least 20 people that had something but just for whatever reason didn't write it down? Either they don't have Facebook or they don't have the wherewithal to do it or the interest in doing it. Did you see how magnificent, what a force of energy this community is? We are powerful. We are beautiful. We are in love with what is. As it is. And someday we will come back to the center and all be together again. And we'll say, wow, remember those days when we had that pandemic and we all had to separate and we all became deeper and more loving than ever before. Let's take that energy within and let us pray. So right here and right now, I simply trust and know that there is a powerful presence, a life and a love that is God. And this love, this life that is everything, Whether you call it God or love or higher power or spirit or universe or nature, this essence is the fabric of existence. It is eternal. It is intangible. It is untouchable by any human condition, any earthly condition, for it transcends yet embraces all things. And so right here and right now, I know that I am one with that, and I know that every single person in this gathering, this virtual gathering, is one with that essence, one with that power, one with that transcendence. And so we rest in that place of knowing and allow it to guide us as together we know the truth for our lives. We know that we are changed at depth by this experience, that anything that seems like the opposite of love, anything that seems like it is challenging or fear-producing, we love ourselves by first acknowledging where we are. We acknowledge our fear, or we acknowledge our resistance, or we acknowledge our pain, and then we offer that to the divine. The divine love that is eager to take it, to either nurture it, or allow it, or transform it, to do the highest and the best with whatever we offer. The highest and best with whatever we offer to bless all beings everywhere. And so we know also that within this time together, that there is time. There is time to focus on creativity, and not only creativity in terms of what we create, like art or what have you, but the art of living, the art of opening our hearts to be more and powerful and greater than we ever thought before. Greatness meaning that great union with the divine that longs to love through us. So we open ourselves to receive new avenues of giving and receiving. We receive service and we give service, both freely. We recognize the love of this community and the love of the community at large, that is the whole world, all beings everywhere, the sweet animal kingdom, nature, grace itself showing up in everything. So I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for the healing and the wholeness that is in this very room, in this virtual space. I'm grateful for this healing and wholeness, this raised awareness of it. I'm grateful for this spiritual center and this teaching. I bless it as I bless all paths to God. Churches, synagogues, temples, mosques, ashrams, all of them. Fundamentalists, atheists, agnostics, all are a blessing. And with a heart that is so filled with blessedness and so filled with love, I say, thank you, Spirit, thank you, God. And I release these words into the divine mystery. And together we say, and so it is.